Good morning. The court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 060034, Dallas Area Rapid Transit versus Amalgamated Transit Union Local Number 1338 from Dallas County and the Fifth Court of Appeals. Docket number 061028, John Leland DDS versus George Brandel and Ruth L. Brandel from Bandera County and the Fourth Court of Appeals District. Justice O'Neill had a family emergency, but she will be sitting in both of those two cases. She will not be sitting in the third case, which is 070195, NRA General Electric Company et al., which is an original proceeding. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in each of these arguments, and the court will take a brief recess between the arguments. We should complete all of them before noon. These proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the website should be posted on the court. To the website should be posted by the end of the day today. The court is ready to hear argument now in 060034 Dallas Area Rapid Transit versus Amalgamated Trust Union.
May it please the court, Mr. Londo will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
My name is Jeff Londa. I represent Dallas Area Rapid Transit, also known as DART.
The Court of Appeals
erroneously concluded in this case that DART's governmental immunity would obstruct Congress's purposes and objectives in enacting Section 13C of the Urban Mass Transportation Act, which is currently known as the Federal Transit Act. This statute was enacted by Congress in 1963. As a result of that conclusion, the Court of Appeals erroneously held that DART's governmental immunity is preempted by Section 13C. In enacting Section 13C, it's clear from the language of the statute, from the Jackson decision from the United States Supreme Court, and from the United States Supreme Court's decision in Donovan, that Congress had two purposes and objectives when it enacted 13C. Purpose one: if a transit system had collective bargaining with its employees at the time it applied for federal assistance, then, as a condition of federal assistance, it must enter into what's called a 13C arrangement approved by the Secretary of Labor that held that the collective bargaining rights would continue. DART was not in that situation. As a public entity, at the time it applied for federal assistance, it did not have collective bargaining rights, and in fact, entering into a collective bargaining agreement with its union, the appellee here, would have been against Government Code 617.002 within the Texas statutes. The second objective of Congress was in enacting 13C. If a transit system applied for federal assistance, and it was in the situation of DART, that is, it did not have collective bargaining, it then must enter into a 13C arrangement approved by the Secretary of Labor that provided that the rights of its employees would not be worsened. That's the language in the statute, and that's exactly what the 13C arrangement here provides. Jackson, the Supreme Court case that's largely at issue in this case, made a few things abundantly clear. One, 13C was not intended to provide a federal cause of action. Two, Section 617.002, which prohibits DART from entering into a collective bargaining agreement, is the type of state law that Congress did not intend to preempt when it enacted Section 13C. Jackson said state law controls labor relations. Jackson said that's the consistent theme throughout 13C. The other thing that Jackson said is the National Labor Relations Act's exemption for governmental employers is not affected by 13C. Donovan case makes a few things clear. It again says if a transit system did not have collective bargaining rights at the time it applied for federal assistance, then 13C does not require collective bargaining rights and does not ensure them. All it does, according to Donovan, and these are the words used in Donovan, is protect the status quo, which in DART's case is a meet-and-confer system. The Court of Appeals says the following: state law controls labor law, as long as the workers' collective bargaining rights are preserved before a local government receives federal assistance, citing Jackson. It's referring to Objective 1 that I mentioned. That does not apply to DART. The Court of Appeals says Congress's intent in 13C is to preserve collective bargaining rights. That's not the case with respect to DART. With respect to DART, it's objective number 2, no worsening. That means the meet and confer system, which was consistent with state law, continued, and that's what the 13C arrangement in this case provides. The Court of Appeals finally said DART's 13C arrangement is consistent with Congress's intent to prevent federal funds from being used to destroy the collective bargaining rights of organized workers.
What do you say about the language in Jackson suggests that you can enforce 13C arrangements by bringing a suit for breach of contract?
I agree with that. Jackson makes clear that kind of lawsuit can be brought in state court, but that's not the kind of lawsuit that we have here. In this case, there was a general grievance resolution signed. Plaintiff's second amended petition, which is the operative petition in the record, says that what they are suing for breach of contract under is the general grievance resolution. The general grievance resolution contains language consistent with state law that says DART retained the right to unilaterally set wages. It also contained the provision that says if DART backs off of what is stated in the general grievance resolution, then the union can file a general grievance resolution. To directly answer your question, Your Honor, if this lawsuit had been brought under the 13C arrangement to enforce the process of meet and confer, that is the status quo that Donovan talks about. If the lawsuit had been brought to do that, for example, what the union should have done in this case is filed a general grievance saying that DART had not abided by what it considered to be the terms of the general grievance resolution, filed it under the 13C arrangement, it would have gone to fact-finding. Fact-finding, a panel then makes a decision. It's advisory. The union's recourse, if it does not like fact-finding, is in the public political arena. It does not establish collective bargaining. If DART had not allowed the union to go to fact-finding, then the union could have brought the type of lawsuit which Jackson talks about, a lawsuit to enforce the process of the 13C arrangement. What the union is trying to do here is to sue under the general grievance resolution, which sets wages, and if the court were to agree with the union's position regarding the general grievance resolution, it would indeed be, in essence, a collective bargaining agreement. That is not what 13C requires be continued.
And you say they can pursue those complaints through the administrative system?
Correct. Union makes much of a case called Plummer out of the Dallas Court of Appeals several years ago. In that case, a bus driver had come to work possessing a firearm in violation of Dallas's and DART's policies. In that case, a trial board, which is different from fact-finding, heard the case much like an arbitrator would, and reinstated that driver without back pay. There was a lawsuit involved as to whether DART needed to comply with reinstating that bus driver. The 13C arrangement in effect at the time, which is different from today, but at the time had individual grievances listed as an attachment and how they would be handled. And that attachment said the trial board's decision is final. So the distinguishing factor between that case and this case is, in Plummer, the union sued to enforce a trial board's decision, which was the final step under the 13C arrangement. The union claimed that DART had not followed the process of the 13C arrangement. That bus driver was reinstated without back pay, so there was no immunity issue there anyway.
Explain to me how the current 13C grievance procedure works.
The current 13C grievance procedure has individual grievances, which are like discharges, that go to a trial board. That individual grievance procedure, though, at Plummer's time was part of the 13C arrangement.
Right.
It is not now. Mr. Gillespie attached it to his filing with this court, but the record shows that the 13C arrangement in effect at the time we're talking about here had only the general grievance procedure attached to it. How it works is this. If the union wants to discuss wages or does not like the wages that DART is paying, then the union files a general grievance. The union and DART then meet and confer, just like they did before 13C arrangement, the 13C arrangement. They meet and confer. If they're unable to reach an agreement, it goes to a fact-finding panel. They make a decision. The decision is public. DART can reject the decision because the 13C arrangement says it's advisory, and the union's recourse is then a political one. The same thing as the union had before the 13C arrangement was signed. And keeping in mind, 13C protects status quo. It does not void Texas's restrictions on collective bargaining. The 13C arrangement itself has an attachment A with some terms on it. Attachment A, paragraph 4, says, the existing rights of employees covered by this agreement to present grievances concerning wages shall be preserved consistent with Article 514C. That's the predecessor number for 617.002. And it also says consistent with three decisions of the Court of Appeals. One of those decisions is Beverly. Beverly says Texas law will not allow DART to enter into a bilateral enforceable contract over wages. It allows the unilateral setting of wages. There's a Attorney General opinion in the record also where the Attorney General, consistent with Beverly, says DART must maintain the right to unilaterally set wages.
Now, the Court of Appeals seemed to rely on this case, Alden versus Maine, and it's
the Court of Appeals. Yes, Your Honor.
And
the
court decision at 13C.
Well, I think what
the preemption for you.
Excuse me. I think what the Court of Appeals did was rely on Jackson. Then on the last page of the decision, it mentions Alden.
Is that misplaced?
I think so. I don't think Alden has anything to do with this case. Alden is a case dealing with whether the Constitution of the United States gave the federal government the right to enact a statute that affected the state of Maine. It was not a preemption case, and I think that last paragraph of the court's decision is really not in play here.
So you're arguing, though, to be sure I understand, that you could they already have the right, the union already has the right under Jackson Transit to sue to enforce the process.
Correct.
You know the local government code was amended several years ago to allow for a waiver of immunity on suits on contracts against local governments in some circumstances. And that wouldn't affect your argument one way or the other here, because if they were suing to enforce the process, then they can already do that, and if they're not, they don't have any right to do that.
That's correct. If I'm thinking of the same statutory amendment,
it's 271.151 to 160. It was, I think, House Bill 2390. But
I think that applies to goods and services and wouldn't come into play here anyway. But yes, Your Honor is correct. The union in this case initially said the sole basis of jurisdiction was the language in DART's enabling legislation, which is Transportation Code Chapter 452. The sue and be sued language was the sole basis for jurisdiction. Obviously, with recent court decisions out of this court, that argument is no longer there, and the Court of Appeals decided this case based on preemption. I would like to point to, in addition to the language contained in the 13C arrangement itself, which basically says DART's meet and confer system continues consistent with 617.002 and consistent with the three cases specifically mentioned there. I'd like to also mention the grievance resolution itself, which the union is suing here about. The language in there is pretty clear, too. It says in the event DART makes a unilateral change to the wages and so forth, as it did for budgetary reasons, such change relieves Local 1338 of its commitment not to file a general grievance. In the managerial section, it talks about DART retaining overall control of its budget, and that is what happened here. A second ground for the plea to the jurisdiction filed in this case was, and it's an additional ground, is that there's no jurisdictional evidence that the union was harmed in any way by a project funded with federal money. The union has in the record some information that DART received federal funds, but it has nothing in the record that indicates that DART used any of those federal funds at any time as operational funds to pay wages. And it's very clear from the 13C arrangement, it says, if someone is to sue for a breach of the 13C arrangement, and keep in mind, I'm saying they're not even suing for that, but if you could consider this a suit for that, they haven't identified a federal project that was used to harm them with respect to this.
And that's jurisdictional?
I think it's jurisdictional because it's an essential element of the claim. There is no claim.
Well, essential element, I mean, that could be, that's a...
No, I mean a jurisdictional element because the statute says that it must be as a result of the project. The actual arrangement itself says, provided, after it talks about if there's a claim here under, it must be as a result of the project, volume rises and falls, or business changes in volume and character of employment brought about solely by causes other than the project, including economics and efficiencies unrelated to the project. These are not within the purview of this arrangement. It's clear here from the record that a decrease in sales tax is what resulted in the decision by DART to deviate from the general grievance resolution.
Of course, ATU disputes that there needs to be a causal connection between the federal funding and the employment detriments. Sounds like your argument is the language under the arrangements just doesn't support their position.
The language doesn't, but also United Transportation Union versus Brock, which is cited in the brief, specifically says the only interests protected by Section 13C are those affected by financial assistance sought. And we cite several other cases in the briefing that says there must be that tie. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counselor. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Gillespie will present argument for the respondent.
Thank you very much. This is an important matter. It involves question of whether the preemption ruling was correct. We assert that it was. It involves about $126 million worth of federal funds a year that flow from the federal government to the DART, and the DART argument is that, that they can have their cake and eat it too, that they can actually receive the federal funds, and that they are not bound by the terms of the 13C arrangements that they sign off on.
That's not exactly his argument, is it?
It's the effect of the argument.
Well,
and I, that's a point well taken, Your Honor. I gave you a handout, which I think is something I'd like to start with, because the case under Jackson Transit is remarkably straightforward when viewed as a preemption question, and that was the question. Mr. Londa said that we originally pled only sue and be sued as a basis for jurisdiction, but in fact we mentioned the 13C agreement, and then certainly in oral argument we made the point, and the judge and I had a colloquy about it.
Of course, Jackson Transit was a different issue. Could you sue in federal court? We're not concerned about that.
It was a different issue, but what Jackson...
What part of 13C says they can't do this? You don't dispute that they're not any worse off after they got the federal funds than before.
You're really mixing questions, and I'll try to parse them out and answer them. First part of your question dealt with whether or not there's something in the 13C agreement that says that we are entitled to sue. Second part of your question is whether or not there has to be a showing that the harm flowed from the receipt of federal funds. So let me answer those separately. Jackson Transit is absolutely critical because Jackson Transit was the U.S. Supreme Court interpreting the intent of Congress. Justice Jefferson has, in the Delta Airlines case, made the ruling that or written the opinion that said that the ultimate touchstone in deciding what the whether or not preemption will apply is the intent of Congress, and in doing that you look at the entire purpose of the statute. Here, Jackson Transit does that for us, even though the issue in Jackson Transit was whether you could bring a suit to enforce a 13C arrangement or the collective bargaining agreement that flowed from it. It went on to delve directly into the question of what was the intent of the UMTA, the Urban Mass Transit Act. And in doing it, it said and this is where the handout deals with it, it is reasonable to conclude that Congress expected the Section 13C agreement and the collective bargaining agreement, like ordinary contracts, to be enforceable in private suit upon a breach. And then they deal with the issue that was directly involved by saying federal court isn't where you go, because UMTA doesn't preempt state law dealing with labor law. Now, it didn't say what I think counsel is suggesting, and that is that no state law is preempted, because it goes on to say the union, there are possible remedies for the violations of 13C agreements and collective bargaining agreements. The union, of course, can pursue a contract issue in state court. In addition, the federal government can respond by threatening to withhold additional financial assistance.
But the petitioner's position, as I understand it, is that sure, you can sue, but only for the process that the agreement promises.
The process argument is interesting. Mr. Londa has said if the suit is brought to enforce the process, such a suit would be proper. That's essentially what he said. Right. And this suit obviously was brought to enforce the process. There's a real interesting thing that's going on here.
I mean, so I understand that.
Yes.
There was a general grievance filed? Or?
Yes, there was. And Justice Willett asked a really great question, and I want to – there's part of Your Honor's question I haven't answered yet.
I'm still waiting.
I realize that. I got another one.
Get back to my great question.
Justice Willis, and I'm going to get back to the federal projects question. In fact, let me answer that. Go ahead. Just nail that down. 13C itself was referenced by Mr. Londa several times, but as luck would have it, that is 49 U.S.C. Section 5333B. And Your Honors can look at that statute, and that statute does not have a single word in it about the need for the arrangement to be concerning the arrangement to be based upon a worsening due to the receipt of federal funds. It doesn't say that.
I mean, the one I'm looking at, which is from the Jackson Transit case, says that the condition of assistance is fair and equitable arrangements, and that such protective arrangements shall include preservation of whatever you had before, continuation of whatever you had before, protection against getting any worse than it was before. I mean, all the detailed things all do relate to, are they worse off than they were before? And my question was, your clients are not any worse off than they were before.
Well, yeah, they are, because before they had the right to pursue a grievance and get it resolved. And this is Justice Willis's question. He asked, what is the general grievance process? Walk through it. And there was a step that they missed. Maybe this is hard to read. It could be. I'll take some of the blame. I literally helped negotiate this language with the federal government and DART back when DART took over from DTS. I'm that old. And the language in it is interesting, and it has several places. There's two prongs of the grievance procedure. One prong is general grievance, and the other prong is other grievances, not individual grievances, as Mr. Londa said. It's other grievances. And you can tell that by looking at Section 8.8, where it lists five different categories of grievances. Category number one is a general grievance. Category 2, 3, 4, 5 is other grievances, which includes a group grievance. We're talking, and so there's two prongs. There's general grievances and other grievances. Now, both allow for a final resolution. And Plummer was a case where another grievance, in fact, it was a discharge case.
Talk about your case.
All right.
Claim is what?
Our claim is that DART has failed to honor a 13C.
No. I mean, your claim is your employees are not being all our employees aren't being paid enough. None of our how many employees are not being paid enough, or what are you mad about?
We're mad because DART did not adhere to the general grievance resolution that it issued in this case, and. I'm still trying to explain how the general grievance process works.
If DART ignored the agreement and decided to double everybody's salary, you probably wouldn't be here.
I'm sure of that.
Well, they're not complaining. What did they do?
Well, we wouldn't be here for a different reason.
Why do you care that they're not? What did they do? They're not paying somebody enough.
We have a right.
Make our lives miserable. What did they do?
There were three other things that they did besides not give the 3% increase that was due in October.
No 3% increase. That's something I can sink my teeth into. We didn't get a 3% increase. Anything else?
Yes. They there were four things. And I, one of them was the SIP, which they, that service incentive pay, which they cut off.
So yours is a employee-wide. Everybody didn't get a 3%.
Exactly. DART unilaterally changed the policy.
Is that a general or an other grievance?
Okay. This was a general grievance, and it was resolved. The point that I need to explain to...
So back before, you know, I know there's a lot of things you want to explain, but you have 75 pages in brief to do that. This is our chance to ask a
gotcha.
Few questions.
Yes, sir.
And so you're saying before the federal funds came in, if we had a complaint, you owe everybody a 3% raise and we didn't get it, what did you file before? You didn't have that's not an individual grievance. What could you do before that you can't do now?
You could file a grievance, and if it got resolved, they would honor it. The general grievance process has several places it can be resolved, and what they point you to is the fact-finding. But in fact, the general grievance procedure can result, this doesn't give away sovereignty, it can result in a resolution. And look, if you will, at page 287 of the record. Page 287 of the record is where the general grievance process is laid out. And what it says is that you file the general grievance. Any dispute that remains following this decision of the assistant to the executive director may be appealed to fact-finding. Well, under the express language of the general grievance procedure, which is part of the 13C arrangement, expressly, we can go to fact-finding, but we can't go to fact-finding with a dispute unless it remains. Here, the dispute did not remain. We have a success story. We filed a grievance. DART heard the grievance. DART issued a resolution, and that resolution said, we'll do these things. We'll give you pay increases. We will keep everything in place for 3 years that except things that we specifically list that we may still mess with. Despite that, they changed things that they promised they would not change.
Are you saying that under the new system they are allowed to not honor the outcome, and under the old system they had to honor it?
I'm saying that under the old system and under the new system they have to honor the outcome of the general grievance process.
In both cases. So,
yes.
So there is, to follow up with Justice Brister's comment, they're still not worse off.
No, we are worse off. 13C says we have a right to enforce the arrangement. The arrangement says what you had before, you get to keep. What we had before was a two-pronged procedure. This was with DTS. We could have general grievances. We could have other grievances. Where we had an other grievance, there was a final resolution by essentially a trial board. Under the general grievance, you go to the DTS, and if you get a result you like, you've got a result. You've got something you can hang on to.
Under the grievance procedure, you know, then and now, you're no worse off, but the enforcement of that decision, you are worse off.
Exactly. They're saying that it's not enforceable now. They're saying that you can get that you can file a general grievance, but we don't have to listen to you. We can listen to you. We can say that you've got something from DART. We've given this to you, but it's not worth the paper it's written on. You can't enforce it.
Well,
in court.
The court in Jackson Transit said you've got to have fair and equitable arrangements. You agree with that, right?
Yes.
And those arrangements primarily would be enforced through private litigation in state court, but the court also imagined, quote, other possible remedies, unquote.
Right.
To protect collective bargaining rights. And why is this procedure not an other possible remedy that might be sufficient?
Well, it is another possible remedy, but it won't be sufficient, and the reason for that is that we literally didn't get to that point. If you'll look at the general grievance procedure, page 287 of the process. The fact-finding can result in a final resolution. This language is very critical. It says, any dispute that remains, this is page 287 of the record, following the decision of the assistant may go to fact-finding. Then it says on fact-finding, you go to fact-finding, and then the fact-finder issues a recommendation. And a paragraph, subparagraph 6 says, if neither side, that's DART or the union, files a dissent, the recommendation shall be deemed agreed upon as a final resolution of the issues submitted. So you can, in fact, get a final resolution through fact-finding. And then it goes on to say, in subparagraph 9, except as provided in subparagraph 6, that's the one I just read to you, the fact-finding report and recommendation shall be advisory only. So we can get something that we can hang our hat on in two places in the general grievance process. We can win, if you want to call it that, by having DART say, we agree with you. You don't have to go to fact-finding. You've got this. We're granting this.
Okay, but you reached a breach. You reached a resolution agreement.
We did.
And now you claim they breached it.
Yes, sir.
And why don't you have to go back through the administrative process to air that claim?
Because that's not that process isn't for when they break the deal that they made. And this is not a bilateral agreement. This is DART without any loss of sovereignty, saying we're going to grant your grievance. And once they say we're going to grant your grievance, that grievance is over with. That grievance doesn't go on up because that grievance is resolved. The same way that if we went to fact-finding, fact-finder issues his report, DART can dissent, the union can dissent. If neither side files a dissent, it is final.
What's the enforcement mechanism if they agree?
It has to be court. And the reason it has to be in court, that gets us back to Jackson Transit, is because Jackson Transit, it's a real interesting decision, says a lot of things. One of the things that it says is you could go to the Department of Labor and ask them to enforce the 13C agreement. And in Jackson Transit, the union actually tried that. And the Department of Labor said, no, we're not going to do it. And the Supreme Court says the union itself has the right to enforce the 13C agreement. Now, there's a straw man argument that DART is making here, talking about collective bargaining. Collective bargaining is not the point here. DART and the ATU 1338 have meet and confer. The granting of a general grievance is not collective bargaining. It is the result of the meet and confer process that is mandated by the federal law. I would like to ask the court to look very carefully at page 270 of the record, which I think is absolutely critical. It is the second page of, or the fifth page, I'm sorry, of the letter that is the 13C arrangement. And on that page, the Department of Labor is stating, language in item 3 below indicates that employees represented by the ATU are intended third-party beneficiaries of the employee protection provisions of the grant contract. By executing the grant contract with the Department of Transportation, DART acknowledges that it assents to the terms therein. Agreement to the terms and conditions certified by the Department is a binding prerequisite to DART's release of federal assistance to DART. And then it lists these three things. And it specifically says in item 1, this letter, the terms and conditions of the arrangement in attachment A and B shall be applied to the instant project and shall be made part of the contract of assistance by reference. Attachment B is the general grievance procedure itself. It's literally part of the 13C arrangement. Item 3, which is critical here, says the terms and conditions of the aforementioned protective arrangements are intended for the primary and direct benefit of the transit employees in the service area of the project. The employees are intended third-party beneficiaries to the employee protective arrangements of the grant contract. The employee's representative may assert claims on their behalf. That's what we're doing. The reason that we are now in court is that we got this two-pronged procedure. This isn't another grievance. This is a general grievance. We filed it as such. We being the union, were trying to resolve a number of areas of concern. We went to DART and we said, here are our grievances. And DART, at that very first step, issued a resolution. And that's in your record at page 82. I'm sorry, these are hard to read, these page numbers. page 88 is the general grievance resolution. And page 88 starts the general grievance resolution, and it includes language that says the resolution of the general grievance filed April 24, 2001 constitutes a final resolution of the issues raised in the general grievance.
How have you been able to resolve your differences with DART?
Sorry?
How have you been able to resolve your differences prior to this?
Up until now,
the problem is something unique. Or?
Up until now, they honored it. If they issued that's what's unthinkable about this. Really, they issued a resolution, and then they took the position that it didn't matter, that we can't enforce that resolution. If they've resolved the grievance. And we accepted that. We did not go forward. We put an end to it. And so to answer your question, that's the way it's been done. In the Plummer case, which I know Your Honor doesn't want to speak very much about, but that was a case where under the other prong, one time and one time only, DART said, we're not going to honor what the trial board does. And when they did that, ATU intervened, and we got a result that put that, I think, to an end. But our position is that in order for the 13C arrangement to have meaning, DART has got to do something. It can't just sign off on these assurances.
How can those arrangements be enforced, in your view? How can they be enforced outside of state court, if at all?
The only other place is to go to the Department
of Labor.
And clearly under Jackson Transit, we have the right to go to state court. And I think that gets me back full circle.
But when Jackson Transit talks about other possible remedies, you said the one and only other possible remedy is the Department of Labor?
That's the only thing I can think of, because Jackson Transit said you can't sue in federal court.
What about political?
Well, political is you can always try to rewrite the statute. But what we've got with Jackson Transit was UMPTA being interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court, and it said that we can enforce in state court.
But other political is you could go to the legislature and ask for permission to sue DART. Anybody can. I could if I wanted to sue.
That's right. We could do that. But I think that the necessary implication of UMPTA is that we don't have to.
You probably represent a lot of voters. So what's so bad if you go ask the legislature for a private bill that allows you to sue DART on precisely this agreement?
Well, the federal purpose would be thwarted. If Congress enacts an act, we don't have to go to the state to get permission to do what Congress said we've got to do.
Any further questions?
I just have one. You earlier argued sue and be sued, and now we're talking about the preemption issue.
This court has ruled on that, and we're not pursuing that argument.
I understand. Do you have any other argument about why immunity is waived that is not still pending in the Court of Appeals or not before us anymore?
Well, we showed the district court that the DART had agreed that it could be sued in another case, and that's in the record. And so we think that they've waived that issue. But we're square before you by saying that the preemption ruling was correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counselor.
A couple points in response, if I might. Mr. Gillespie was asked questions about what the general resolution did. What it actually did was call for a 4% wage for bargaining unit employees, basically drivers and mechanics represented by the union, over 3 years. 4% each year. DART paid the 4% the first year, paid it the second year, and gave a bonus in lieu of the 4% roll into wages called for in the resolution. The resolution contemplated and states that DART did not give up its unilateral right as a governmental entity under Texas law to set wages. It could deviate from the resolution. The resolution specifically said, in the event DART makes any unilateral change, except for the issues remaining open, but that means any change to what was agreed in the resolution during the term of this resolution, such change relieves the union of its commitment not to file a general grievance. So the union could file a general grievance saying it was unfair for DART to not do the 4% roll into wages and to do a bonus instead.
The resolution further says matters of inherent managerial policy are reserved exclusively to DART under the law. These include, but shall not be limited to, such areas of discretion or policy as the functions and programs of DART, standards of services, and its overall budget.
Now, suppose those provisions were not there, and there was just the 4% provision.
If those provisions were not there, Your Honor, I don't think legally it would make any difference. If those provisions weren't there, Jackson still says that, and 13C itself says, that the union could sue in state court for the process. They should go to fact-finding. They didn't.
Why should they go through it again when they've gone through it before, and now they just claim you won't honor the decision?
They did not go through it before. They went, they filed a general grievance, got a resolution. They got paid 2 years under the resolution. DART did not pay the third year. They never went to fact-finding, which involves a neutral person and two appointed representatives making a decision like a tribunal. It's advisory, correct, but that's the same right DART had before. DART has, under Texas law, the unilateral right to set wages. It was not given up in the resolution. To further answer your question, what the union would be asking, basically, even if these provisions weren't in here, was for the court to say that there's been a waiver of immunity by contract. This court has said, it said so in the Texas A&M Kerrville case, I think it's versus Lawson in, I think, 2002, a governmental entity like DART cannot contract away immunity. That is up to the Texas legislature to do.
But you agree that 13C, as construed by Jackson Transit, does waive immunity at least for a suit to require the process.
To require the process, but we would not be here before you on an immunity claim then because it would not be a suit for money damages, and that's where immunity applies under state law. One further thing, and then I will conclude. Justice Brister asked a question about 13C, and Mr. Gillespie, I think, said 13C doesn't say anything about worsening. It does. It says, arrangements under this subsection shall include provisions that may be necessary for, then it says, preserving of existing collective bargaining agreements or otherwise, the continuation of collective bargaining, and the court said that means where it existed before. And it says here in C, the protection of individual employees against a worsening of their positions related to employment. And that's what the 13C agreement did. It protected DART's bargaining unit employees against a worsening of their conditions of employment. It gave them fact-finding. It preserved DART's rights under state law. And if there had been a violation of the process, there could be a Jackson suit. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Counselor. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.